It's your call. Welcome back. I'm Angie Quero in for Rose Aguilar today with our One Planet series. Annie Waldman is on the line. She covers healthcare for ProPublica. Her latest piece, written with Sharon Lerner, is NIH's plan to end future funding to study the health effects of climate change. It's good to have you back, Annie.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's the latest whack upside the head to science from Donald Trump and company. So are these cuts we're discussing about to happen, will happen, may have happened? What's the timeline here?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, to really understand this, you know, we have to go back to the beginning of the year. You know, as a news organization, we at ProPublica have been following these policy changes at the various federal health agencies. And, you know, it was clear early on that early on in this administration, that there were many changes happening at the National Institutes of Health that were flagged for us as very notable. You know, I think it's important to kind of get a sense, you know, about the NIH. It's the main agency in the federal government that's responsible for biomedical and public health research. It conducts a lot of its in-house research, inside the organization, but the vast majority of its funding, about 80%, is provided to external researchers at universities, medical centers, other research institutions, and that's roughly $35 billion in funding each year, and that funds about 50,000 grants, which helps about 300,000 researchers a year. It's really the crown jewel of the American research ecosystem. And, you know, we started hearing about changes at the NIH at the beginning of the year. They were mostly small at first. You know, some initial red flags were a communications freeze, which blocked NIH staff from communicating with researchers. There was also an internal travel ban and delays in grant funding. But then, as you noted, in recent weeks, the administration has actually escalated its actions. And in an unprecedented move, they've started to terminate grants to external researchers. These are active grants, you know, and the research topics and ideas were already approved by a team of peer reviewers. And these researchers have received these notices in recent weeks that their funding has been cut off. You know, many of these terminations were targeted grants that were focused on subjects that are viewed as conflicting with the Trump administration's priorities, like gender identity, vaccine hesitancy, diversity, equity, and inclusion. But then what we uncovered last week is that according to internal records, they are also cutting off future funding for projects. So not just terminating grants that are currently active, but actually resetting the priorities of the institution. And they have said internally that they are no longer going to be funding work on the health effects of climate change. And this is a huge direction shift for the agency that could have a very large impact on critical research that's necessary for us to understand how to protect our most vulnerable populations in this warming world.
You know, I appreciate your effort to get something from the Department of Health and Human Services to answer that, but what the agency came back with is just chilling. At HHS, we are dedicated to restoring our agencies to their tradition of upholding gold standard evidence-based science as we begin to make America healthy again. Make America healthy again is capitalized, just like, you know, make America great again, make this great again, make that, make America healthy again. And it's just, it's galling and chilling to see what's essentially a political slogan come out of what is supposed to be a health-devoted agency.
Yeah, I was pretty taken aback by their response. You know, my fellow journalists at ProPublica, we've received similar responses from other agencies that appear to be doubling down on the administration's new priorities. And I think, you know, the bottom line that I take away when I read a statement such as this from Health and Human Services is that we have found ourselves in a place where it's appropriate and perhaps even necessary to start asking critical questions about the administration's approach to science. You know, are we in the midst of a war on science in this country? Who do we want to decide, which research and science is funded and allowed? Is it the politicians with their own ambitions who should be deciding, or the scientists themselves?
Well, in fact, you talk about in the article about a Biden administration initiative that has been reversed and cut by the Trump administration. And to play devil's advocate here, by virtue of the Biden administration starting its own initiatives there, can you say that, well, it was politicized already? They're not politicizing an animal that wasn't already there. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's a really interesting question. You know, I always go back to the scientists who, they are not political, you know, beings. They're, you know, most science institutions are not political. You know, it's a general consensus that climate change is happening. And as extreme weather events such as hurricanes, heat waves, wildfires, and floods continue to intensify and become more frequent. You know, it wasn't the politicians that were banging the drums saying, we need to research this more and we need to understand it. It was the scientists who were really saying that we need to examine the impact climate change has on public health. So the NIH actually came years after the scientists were saying, let's invest more money into this so that we can understand how to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and eventually this did become a priority, as you mentioned, for those in political power. You know, in 2021, President Joe Biden, under his leadership, the NIH did launch a new program looking at the climate change in health in order to further kind of coordinate and encourage greater research and training in this area. But it wasn't something that just his administration was supporting. This was something that Congress recognized as important as well. You know, this initiative at the NIH had received $40 million in congressional appropriations for research in both 2023 and 2024. And in fact, they tallied a number of their ongoing research projects that they were funding, which, you know, seem kind of rational ideas, you know, including research to examine the health impacts of the Maui wildfires in Hawaii. Or they had another study to develop models to predict dengue virus transmission by mosquitoes, and another study to look at the effects of heat on fertility and reproductive functions. You know, topics like these, according to the previous administration, other scientists that we have spoken with, these are critically important for us to look at as a society. But when the Trump administration came in, you know, there were early signs that this research of climate change and health was under threat. You know, as you mentioned, this initiative that was set up in 2021 and had millions in a congressional appropriations and two other similar programs, they were dismantled in the first few weeks of the administration. If you go to the websites of these initiatives or try to look up reports, at this NIH initiative from previous years, they had been taken down and largely erased from, you know, public memory. And after these initiatives were dismantled, it was a month later or last week when we uncovered that this new guidance is effectively ending the future funding of research looking at the health effects of climate change. Mm.
You know, I should mention, by the way, that for those pages that are being disappeared from the websites with the NIH, the HHS, and other government organizations, a lot of them, fortunately, have been archived online with an effort spearheaded by archive.org. I can't say that these specific ones are there, but at least some things were rescued from the website before it started to be wiped clean. So that's a little bit of good news. So, in fact, you're looking at a number of people giving you opinions in this article. And one of them is Dr. Lisa Patel. She's with the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health. It's a coalition of medical professionals that raises awareness about the health effects of climate change. And she says flat out, this is an agenda item for the fossil fuel industry. This administration is doing what the fossil fuel industry wants. Do you know if the fossil fuel industry has had direct impact or input on this, or is it more of a general making their desires clear?
I think it's more the latter, making their desires clear. You know, it's not news to anyone that this kind of research has had a lot of hostility from industry over the years. But, you know, researchers and scientists have continued to conduct studies and examinations that have found that it's clear that climate change is a fundamental threat to human health. Mm-hmm. There really is a scientific consensus on this matter. It doesn't only impact our physical environment, but it can also impact our human biological systems, you know, increasing the risk of death from more frequent natural disasters, non-communicable and infectious diseases, and other types of health emergencies. And, you know, I think that when scientists are finding that the risk is great and we need to continue studying this, it does raise questions about should we be changing, you know, the way that we have energy in this country, the way that we go about going after fossil fuels. And so I don't think, from Dr. Patel's understanding, I believe that she sees this as something that the fossil fuel industry has not wanted illumination of, because it does ask these broader questions of what we should be doing in society in order to counter these climate changes.
You know, our producer, Malihe Razazan, came up with a big fat contradiction. Trump's EPA is doing everything it can to deny the science of climate change. But even on its own website, it says climate change poses many threats to the health and well-being of Americans. This includes increasing the risk of extreme heat events, and heavy storms, increasing the risk of asthma attacks, changing the spread of certain diseases carried by ticks and mosquitoes. Some of those health impacts are already happening in the United States. Climate change can exacerbate existing health threats or create new public health challenges through a variety of pathways. That's on the EPA site, and I'm just wondering if they haven't got around to wiping that out yet or if it's even still there this morning.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, you know, we're seeing things moving so quickly that sometimes it's hard to know, you know, is this stance from 3 months ago or is this from 2 weeks ago? But, you know, there's a lot of interesting kind of contrasting viewpoints within the Trump administration. I think no one represents this more than RFK Jr., who's currently at the helm of Health and Human Services. And, you know, his perspective on climate change really seems to contrast Trump's perspective and the actions he's taken in recent years. You know, RFK Jr. spent decades as an environmental attorney. He joined two nonprofits back in the day that focused on environmental protection, Riverkeeper and the Natural Resources Defense Council. And he hasn't shied away from expressing his views on the climate in recent years. Just last year in an interview with a surfing magazine, he said that he believes the climate crisis is real and that humans are causing it and that it's existential. You know, but many experts have told me, including Dr. Lisa Patel, that, you know, they don't expect that RFK Jr. is going to go against the Trump administration's priorities. You know, what she told me is that RFK Jr. is not really going to push his perspective on climate change. She told me that she does not believe he's going to be following the best science and that RFK Jr. will continue to allow the Trump administration's priorities to go forward.
Well, in fact, he's looking at downsizing HHS even further. He's going to be helping out Musk, semi-President Musk. He's going to be eliminating more jobs at the HHS, planning to fire, this is RFK Jr., planning to fire 10,000 full-time employees, shuttering or downsizing a number of divisions under the HHS umbrella, including virtually eliminating some offices tasked with tackling HIV and improving minority health. And that's kind of a ding, 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 because as you say, a lot of what's being shut down coincides with the worldview of Donald Trump and Musk and the GOP, which is, you know, LGBTQ is bad. And, you know, people who have HIV are, you know, clearly LGBTQ. It just looks like they don't care that much about minorities either, because that's getting some of the cuts. Is that a pattern you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing broadly is that these terminations are targeting grants that focus on subjects that are viewed as conflicting with the Trump administration's priorities. You know, you mentioned gender identity, LGBTQ issues, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion. And inside of that, we're seeing health equity projects that are being terminated. You know, and Trump administration's also canceling grants at Columbia University because, you know, the NIH stated it was because of the university's inaction with the campus protests during the past year. So what we're seeing broadly is that science is being politicized, it appears, and the politics are determining what is allowed to be funded and not. And what I heard from a lot of scientific researchers and folks who were at the NIH, that they said that these changes are such that our ecosystem cannot easily heal from them. Researchers have really described their scientific fields to me almost as forests, you know, that have taken centuries to grow with, you know, research lines intertwined like trees. And once you cut that forest down with an indiscriminate chainsaw, you know, these ecosystems, forests of research, if you will, are irrevocably harmed. They cannot grow back overnight. It cannot be reversed with a new policy change. These cuts will take years to grow back if they even can. Perhaps they will not grow back with the same vigor and strength that they had before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many also express that these policy changes are going to create a brain drain. People will leave the United States for Europe or Canada, or young people will not enter the fields of science at all, put off by the instability and politicization of a field which in recent decades has not been driven by politics.
That's really frightening. I do want to invite our listeners to chime in and bring us their questions and comments. So if you're by your phone, give us a call, 866-798-TALK or 866-798-8255. We're talking about the ProPublica article co-written by my guest Annie Waldman and her co-author Sharon Lerner. The article is NIH Ends Future Funding to Study the Health Effects of Climate Change. Your questions and comments are welcome both by phone and by email. If you prefer to email us, we are watching your call at KALW. www.thenationalinstitutesofhealth.org. I'm wondering if you yourself perhaps have had experience with some of the governmental cuts coming down, if you have benefited from some of the NIH research, if you have a condition that is being treated by the effects, the products of that research. It would be interesting to hear your experience. Again, the phone line is 866-798-8255. You can email your call at kalw.org. So you point out that the Trump administration, Annie, is also considering a plan to eliminate the scientific research office of the EPA. So that's yet another animal that is trying to work for the public good. And you say that the EPA office wrote in an emailed response to your questions, Trump EPA is dedicated to being led by our commitment to the agency's core mission of protecting human health and the environment, unlike Biden EPA appointees with major ethical issues that were beholden to radical stakeholder groups. They're not even pretending that every single department is not politically compromised at this point.
Right. I think, you know, there's this big question that is happening right now where for a long time science was seen as objective. There's objective truths. There are things that are real. But right now, it seems almost as though there's this subjectification that's happening in the fields of science across the federal government. What this reminds me of is oftentimes how disinformation or misinformation works, right? It's similar to how vaccine skepticism proliferates in this country, where you question that there is objectivity in something and allow for this kind of subjective skepticism to come in and invade our scientific process. And this is kind of happening across the board, whether it's with climate change, whether it's with, you know, vaccine hesitancy projects, which are also being terminated. Our concept of gender or sexual identity is being challenged right now. And what's happening is that the administration is essentially putting it as though there are two sides to things and that there's a perspective that can be held within these things, which have long been viewed as, you know, quest for scientific objective truth.
I want to bring in another element here, and that's Project 2025. The Office of Budget Management, OMB Director Russell Vought, said what he happens to be one of the architects of the Project 2025. He said this move is fantastic. And Nature.com has an article, How Trump is Following Project 2025's Radical Roadmap to Defund Science. So a lot of this was already predicated by what he was running on and who was funding a lot of the money, who was funding a lot of the practicalities of where this administration was going to go. I wonder if you've been tracking the Project 2025 ambitions and how they're lining up with what you're working on here.
Yeah, I mean, we've been seeing Project 2025 enacted, really. And, you know, one thing that I read in Project 2025 that we haven't seen that could impact the NIH is that there is a couple sentences in Project 2025 that says, instead of having kind of this centralized grant system where the NIH has extramural grants that it funds to research institutions, and there's a peer review system where, you know, scientists with the most knowledge decide which grants get funded, that there's a potential that in Project 2025, they are suggesting having a block grant program. And this would radically reshape the research enterprise in this country. With a block grant program, that means that states would then have the funding for extramural research, for research for universities and biomedical centers, and the states could decide what gets funded. You know, in some states, they may still have a peer review system and it may still be done by scientists. But, you know, there's nothing to say that it could be done in a politicized way in some parts of the country. And that would really, really reshape the way that research is funded in this country. It would reshape the authority of the National Institutes of Health. So, you know, I think there are still some things in Project 2025 that have not been enacted, but it's causing a lot of individuals within the scientific establishment to be very afraid about the future of science in this country.
You know, there are more questions about the article itself I want to go into with you, but I want to make sure to get this in before we run out of time. And that is the job of journalists right now working with an administration that is historically, I mean, even before they came in for the second time, historically averse to journalism, not fond of journalists per se. And you managed to get your hands on an internal report. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you, hey, Annie, who handed that over to you? I'm not going to do that. But I am curious as to how you are able to do your job when so many doors are already shut, so many more doors are closing, and there is an atmosphere of terror amongst people as to what Donald Trump and Elon Musk could do to them if they're caught being disloyal. Just talk about doing your job in that atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, as journalists, it is our job to get into areas of the federal government that don't have a lot of light. You know, that there's not a lot of insight of what's going on. And it's even more critical in this time. You know, when I'm able to communicate with individuals who work in the federal government now, they describe to me, as you said, it's a climate of hostility. It's a climate of terror. Many say that they feel like they're being held hostage by fear, that they can't speak out publicly about what's going on inside the federal government for fear that they may lose their job, their livelihood, or that by speaking out, they could actually harm the institutions in which they work at, which they really do believe in. Mm-hmm. And so what's so important as journalists is to just bear witness to what's going on, to be there to listen to people, to be there to vet sources, to vet records, to be there to hold power to account. And that's ever more important now. It's always important, of course, mm-hmm. but now because we don't necessarily have the same avenues of insight that we have in, you know, previous administrations, you know, it's ever more important to connect with federal workers, to hear what's going on behind the scenes, particularly as these changes are happening so quickly. Sometimes, you know, we'll hear one day that thousands of people are going to be fired. And, you know, under in previous times, that might take 6 months. But in this era, it could happen the next day or 3 days from then. So it's so important to have these communications with people who work in the federal government who can tell the public what is going on, because we're not necessarily getting that same story from official sources.
What can you tell a potential source when they tell you they're terrified of losing their job or endangering their organization? What can you tell them as a journalist?
Well, I think for people who do want to share their story and their experiences, they are often driven by something else. There's nothing that I can necessarily tell somebody to convince them to talk about what's going on. You know, I think there are some people who are just so mission driven and they believe in protecting the public good that they believe this information is vital to get out to the public. It's vital to educate the public on what's going on. And so I think just having conversations about that, listening to people, doing your best to make sure that you can protect their identity if they want to release information. That's our job as a journalist, is to be that intermediary for people who have information that is vital to the public good and the public itself.
We're tight on the clock here, but we're going to squeeze in a phone call from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Can I ask you to make it concise for us?
Yeah, I'll try to, and I'm sorry for the feedback. I forgot to turn my radio down.
Okay, no problem.
Okay. The anti-science issue seems to me is in a much broader issue, and that is these people are anti-truth. Mm. Everywhere across the board, it doesn't matter whether it's science or politics or the economy. I'm not sure what their vision of the kind of society they want us to live in is really understandable. They want to go back to laissez-faire capitalism, it seems. So it's mind-boggling to try and understand the implications of all of this.
Greg, I think you're speaking for so many people when you express your frustration and your amazement at the depth of what's going on. Annie, I'm sure you've heard much of the same.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard kind of shock from a lot of people, you know, and I hear from federal workers all the time who just feel paralyzed by the situation that's going on right now. I mean, you know, we're living in kind of unprecedented times when it comes to what's happening in these scientific institutions in our federal government. But I do think it's important for everyone to voice their opinions and to voice their experiences and to share what's going on, because that's the only way that, you know, the public will know what's happening in these institutions.
That's what they can do with the information you're giving them, is, you know, they can make the phone calls, they can show up at the protests. There are now protests in front of the Heritage Foundation because people are connecting the dots there as well. So it's definitely useful to have your information. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Annie Waldman. She covers healthcare for ProPublica. Her latest piece was written with Sharon Lerner. It's called NIH's Plan to End Future Funding to Study the Health Effects of Climate Change. It's interesting, you can support ProPublica, and I mistook them for being a subscription publication. They are not. They're doing their work out there for free for everybody. It's amazing work at ProPublica.org. And if you want to support them, you don't need to worry about subscription rates. Just do what you can to help them out. If you would like to listen to our past shows, there's a place you can do that, where you can also sign up for our podcast, and you can sign up for our newsletter. All of that happens at kalw.org/yourcall. You can also give us an email with your show ideas and feedback, yourcall@kalw.org. Malia Hirazizan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thank you for joining us. It's good to have you. I'm Angie Cuero in for Rose Aguilar today. It's Your Call.